Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Back to LA Talk Radio. This is another wonderful installment of The Writer's Block, belonging, of course, to LA Talk Radio and myself and Bobby Jean and Richard and whoever else wants to put a quarter in. Okay, we are going to be having a wonderful evening tonight. We have a great guest with us. But first, let's ask Bobby how she's doing down there in good old Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, well, we had high 90s today, and I guess some smoke in the sky from fires, I think, in Arizona. And I don't know, Richard, are you having any smoke in Colorado from anything? No.
No, it's too windy here today. Nothing stays in the Grand Valley, but for like half a second, it's over Denver. So it's been windy.
Well, it's the West. Water and fire are part of our heritage here, right?
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. And that distant voice you hear is, of course, Richard Polinelli, who is sitting there in his office. And let's hope his microphone's going to be a cool source tonight, because you and Bobby are using the same mic, Blue Yetis. So
yeah,
should be good.
Hey, last week my mic had a mind of its own and just decided to go to Megaphone, so I have no idea.
And I, of course, am sitting in my little secret studio somewhere in the Sawtooth Mountains in Idaho, where I can't be found by anybody, including the IRS. So let's take it from there. Tonight is brought to you by, of course, Black Dog Publishing and LA Talk Radio and, golly, just Creative Edge Publicity. And it's also we have a special running, Richard and I do, at Black Dog and Tuscany Bay Books. And if you're a writer and you have something that you want to get out to the public and you want to put it on our show, we have a $25 charge. You just need to email me directly, jimchristina@yahoo.com. Send me a 1 minute or less information about the topic of the book, the title, your information, and whatever else you want to say about the book in 1 minute or less. And then you send your $25 to jchristina@TuscanyBayBooks on PayPal, and we'll get you set up, and we'll let you know what date your ad is going to run. And it's going to be a really good deal for a lot of people. We do have some people interested. It's just now pushing them over the edge of the cliff. Mm-hmm. And Bobby Jean is sitting here, and she has like four radio shows going. And she actually, I asked her earlier, and she does have and is looking continually for new Western artists, musicians and such. So Bobby, why don't you give us a real brief shot at that?
Sure. I'm delighted to co-host a radio program Thursday mornings with a gentleman out of Nashville, Gary Holt, called Campfire Cafe. And every week we interview a Western musician, occasionally country, occasionally bluegrass, and we play their music and actually interview them. We have about 600,000 people worldwide that listen to us live. And then, of course, it becomes a podcast. And we're always looking for really great talent out there. You do have to have some music recorded. We do have to, you don't play live. We talk to you live, but your music does have to be recorded. And then I host my own show, three of them, where I create a playlist and play music. So I am also always looking for new music. And you can just reach out to me at Bobby with an I, B-O-B-B-I, Jean with a J, G-E-A-N, Bell.
Fantasy Quartet won New Apple Literary's Excellence in Independent Publishing in 2015, which is a kudos, V. They have published short fiction in several anthologies. Richard, you ought to get together with V because we're trying to put together another anthology. When she's not writing, V, of course, is an archaeologist, and she is always working hard someplace in the heat, the dust, the dirt, the grime, the rain, digging up stuff from wherever. And they are terrific guests. The last time she was on, I got sick and had to leave. I promise that will not happen tonight. So please welcome back to the Writer's Block, V. S. Holmes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, we woke up the crowd.
We did. You know, the crowd loves you. The crowd loves you. It's sometimes it's hard to settle them down, but they love you. I'm going to mea culpa right now. I have felt like kind of like crap all week, so I never really got a chance to finish your book. Richard did. Bobby Jean read your others, so I'm going to kind of let them lead your questioning tonight, and I will ask when we get into the meat of your interview, and then I'll pipe up and say something stupid. Richard, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to toss it to Bobby because I think we need to start with Heretics being the fourth book of the series. We really should start at the beginning of this thing because that was one thing I was hoping to have time was to get back and start reading the early books because there's references in the fourth book that you need that foundation. So I'm going to do a lateral and give the ball to Bobby and let her start off with those first three books.
Okay, well, I really enjoyed, first off, I'm just going to say it, I really enjoyed reading Travelers, book one of the Nell Bentley series, and I expected to jump right over to book four, but you had me hanging on a cliff at the end of book one, and I knew, obviously, things would be somewhat resolved or we wouldn't have a book four, but I really wanted to know what happens to Nell in book two. So then I read book two and then I thought, okay, I'll jump to Heretics. And then I thought, no, once again, they're leading me to book three, which I just started today and didn't get in too far. First off, I think, I love them. I really enjoyed these books. You are an archaeologist by trade. You mentioned just a few moments ago you're working right now. Mm-hmm. And I think as a kid, it was one of the dreams that I had. I was really interested in Egypt, as we all often are as kids. Mm-hmm. And you really describe what a day is like for an archaeologist.
I leave out some of the more colorful details, if you can believe me.
You put a lot in. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Nell and the world that she's living in and maybe about her work, because there's no point in me sharing that. Let's hear that from you. Tell us a little bit about your main character.
So Nell Bentley, Dr. Nell Bentley, you better not call her Annalise. She's an academic archaeologist. And so that what that means is she teaches most of the year. And then she runs field school. The particular field school that she's running in Travelers is in Chile, though I've never worked in Chile myself. And she really enjoys her work. She has such a passion for archaeology and the culture of archaeology, but she's not a teacher. Maybe by nature, she's a little impatient, and isn't great about, you know, teaching her students maybe constructively. So that's something that she sort of struggles with throughout the series. But she really loves her job, and you know, not to give too many spoilers. You know, she's a diehard skeptic. She loves science. She likes facts. And things start to go off. And part of the story is really how she is dealing with her life's work being completely turned on its head, and all the frustrations that come with that, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Y'all have created some really interesting characters. I really liked them all. She is, as you say, she's got anger, you know, she's just very complex, and yet I was so drawn to her. And some of what you, what y'all write in her, what she's thinking about, mm-hmm. I wonder to myself sometimes, is this V.S. Holmes talking right now, or is this actually Nell? There was one line that spoke to me when she says, I think to understand where we're going, we need to know where we've been. I think every part of our lives is one long search for home. I think true humanity comes from that search and understanding that everyone searches. And our greatest achievements have been through leaping, untethered. Leaping is how we grow. And when I read that, I thought, yeah, and it's in a conversation she's having with another character, Emilio. But I wondered, is that Nell speaking, or is that partly the archaeologist in you speaking?
Yes. both. Definitely both. You know, I get a lot of questions about how close Nell is to me. Because, you know, there's some pretty obvious parallels, you know, very sort of not superficial in a bad way, but, you know, superficial insofar as, you know, surface stuff. And we are pretty similar, I think, in some ways. I do like to say she gets to say the things I can't, specifically in a work context, maybe. But no, definitely a lot of her philosophy and a lot of what drives her, both to and away from her career as an archaeologist and all the people within that career, that's definitely coming from me and from my philosophies. I think archaeology, though it's a very romanticized career a lot of times, you know, like you yourself said, a lot of people are like, oh, I really wanted to be an archaeologist when I grew up. You know, there's a lot of complexities in the field of archaeology because mm-hmm. Researchers are complex. And I tried to put a lot of that into these books. I think a huge part of the whole series, sort of a love letter to the complexities of humanity mm-hmm. and archaeology, but really humanity and science. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely a lot of those things, a lot of the more flowery parts are.
We never see Indiana Jones mapping out a space.
That brings up a question. I have to ask this, and I've never asked this question before. And by golly, I'm going to ask it tonight. You are an archaeologist. Mm-hmm. When you are writing, do you ever have a tune running through your head as you're writing your book?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I have to listen to music when I write most of the time. Uh-huh. I can't. My brain won't focus if I don't have like something else for the background to focus on.
Sure.
So definitely. But I think it's more like each book and each character kind of has a theme song or soundtrack. But it's not often the Indiana Jones theme song.
Well, I wasn't going to ask that, but thank you for the clarification.
Well, before I turn it over to Richard, since we're talking about music, and she does listen to music. She has different sounds, you know, playlists that she's created. I wasn't familiar with any of that music. I really want to go find some of that music to listen to. But I liked this other comment, the pounding of shovels on dirt echoes in our favorite music. Mm-hmm. Dirt was the reason Nell breathed, the reason her feet walked, the reason she grinned even after a shit day. And I thought, oh, that's just so great. Okay, Richard, I'm done. What would you like to talk to?
Well, I was kind of hoping we kind of developed the series a little bit before we got to Heretics. But, okay. The one thing I noticed now, but when you jump into a series this far in, you know, obviously there's going to be some references. And but you did a very good job, I thought, of at least giving us a little bit of information on some of these, the things that had happened before. So we got a good feel for it.
Thank you.
Is it Mikey or Mickey?
Mikey, yeah.
Okay, so obviously what happens to him happens in the previous book. Mm-hmm. And Nell is still kind of dealing with that. The IDH, I kind of got a feeling they were kind of the old saying is the worst thing you can hear from a government official is I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Yes.
That's the feeling I'm getting with the IDH in this story. Do you find that it's helpful to put those little nuggets in that deep into a series in case you have a reader who's coming in late, like I did?
I mean, I do think it's helpful. It's unintentional, actually, for the most part. I tend to write series. I don't ever really go into something anticipating that it's going to be a series. And then suddenly it's like, oh, I guess six books later. So it's not intentional, but I did want to do it a little with this series because it is a faster paced, throughout each book, it's faster paced than my previous series, which was Epic Fantasy, which is definitely one of those, you can really just pick it up anywhere. And I think that's lends itself to anyone picking it up. And each adventure is a little bit self-contained, though there are, very clear parallels. I hadn't had someone pick up a book in the middle of the series until Joe Compton picked up Strangers. And he was the one who said, I read it totally fine without having read the previous two. It stood on its own completely, fine. And that really surprised me because I didn't mean to. But I think part of it is because Nell is so impacted by the events of, what happens to Mikey in the first book, and then, the events of Strangers and all the tragedies there. I think it's sort of naturally to me referencing back because she's still stuck in that trauma and stuck in her own sort of pig-headed stuff that's going on. So, I think it helps that she is that way. If I had a more character, maybe that wouldn't work.
Okay, don't quit. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block, and we'll be right back right after this brief word from LA Talk Radio.
Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the link that says Be a Host, and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say. And if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com. And listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific for the Writer's Block right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are back. We are back live with author V.S. Holmes. Of course, and our wonderful host for this evening, Mr. Richard Polinelli and Ms. Bobby Jean Bell. And if you want to call and talk to V.S. and or Richard or Bobby Jean, or I don't know why anybody would want to talk to me, but you can if you'd like. You can call and this number right here, 323-203-0815. Again, that number is 323-203-0815. And I know it is correct because I have it written down on this piece of paper. I have given the wrong phone number out so many times. Yes,
can I? Well, let me just say a little something about book two.
Okay.
It's really an adventure story. Here's Nell, and she has to get herself from where we leave her at the end of book one. She has to get to Canada, and there's not a lot of cast. She's got a couple great friends that help her, but I couldn't breathe. I mean, there were times where, I have to just put this down and walk away because it's very tense filled because she's there against nature. She has, she has honey packs and ketchup packs, and she has, not a whole lot. It was interesting though that she was able to maneuver herself through partly because of her archaeology background and her ability to read the land. I would not be somebody that could lead, the scouts out onto any kind of a campaign. Do you want to just maybe talk a bit about that book, number two, which is, I think, Drifters? Mm-hmm. Drifters, is that right? Yeah. I hadn't thought about, we were just jumping right to Heretics, but maybe I'd talk about Drifters for a moment.
For sure. So it's funny that you mentioned the navigating. So, I spend a lot of time in the woods, though half of our job is in cities. Like right now we're working in sort of a suburban area. I've spent a lot of time on power line corridors, and it's a very strange space. It's sort of deserted, but a lot of people go to those places, though they're not supposed to be there. Basically to be weird, to be weird humans. And a lot of the things that she encounters during her trek, through the New England wilderness are things that I've encountered, maybe maybe to a lesser extent, you know, I haven't lost any toes to frostbite yet, but I've experienced, you know, the borderline that. And that, yeah, I was really inspired by doing a lot of that work. You know, just a strange place to be, a very liminal space. And the views and the wilderness and the weird people that you meet doing that, you know, I wanted to include that, just like I included a lot of the field school and the actual archaeology and the technical aspects in Travelers. I wanted to sort of showcase more of the environment that I've experienced and how beautiful and also how grueling that can be. You know, what happens when you've eaten that gas station hot dog that was so awesome, and suddenly it's not so awesome anymore. I do love gas station hot dogs, so I had to like write my ode to terrible gas station food in that. And I've actually eaten the hot dog from that exact gas station. It didn't make me sick. There's no bad PR. But I really enjoyed writing the adventure of that. And when I was writing that book, it was actually in sort of the throes of 2016, which was a very tumultuous year for me, for a lot of people. And I sort of poured all of the all of that turmoil into a lot of what Nell was experiencing with this confusion and the grief, and also just surviving and trying to survive for that. I actually had to rewrite that book too, because there was my critique partner at the time was like, we can't have stages of just depression. Me, like, we can't. So that was a little tricky. You know, I had to pare that down towards the end.
Now, you mentioned in book four, and again, I'm coming in with no knowledge of what happened the previous three books. There's some people that are mentioned, the founders and the teachers.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about them, because it sounds like this is an interesting dynamic working within the people from Earth and people like Nell. So what's the backstory on them?
So I wanted to turn the ancient aliens stuff on its head, because it's almost those theories are a lot of the more problematic ones are rooted in the idea that, you know, people can't create things like pyramids on their own. We're genius, and we create all sorts of stuff, mostly problems for ourselves, but we create a lot of really cool things. And so I wanted to turn that on its head and sort of say, okay, what if the extraterrestrials didn't so much, you know, come to Earth and play around with our, you know, during the sort of Stone Age, but what if they instead were abducting people? And what would happen to the people who were abducted and then came back? And so IDH sort of along those lines, and the teachers being the creatures who did the abducting. And then I wanted to explore the idea of like, okay, well, then there are people left behind. And obviously those stories end up in, you know, mythos across the globe. And the founders are the people who were left behind and who decided, like, no, we think we can do this on our own. We think that we can, you know, thrive and create civilizations on our own. And you can take our brethren and do what you want, but that's not our choice. And so it's sort of these two very disparate, the same, from the same background, coming back together and having maybe some of the same ideals even, but thinking that you can get there through different paths. Cause I think that's something that all people should sort of listen to and consider, as, you know, especially in, you know, times where we're very, very divided. You know, sometimes it's not so much the goal that's different. It's just how we get there.
So you didn't go for the black monolith thing that Clark did in 2001 then?
I mean, not quite. There's not definitely quite, some references. Yeah. There's definitely some references. Yeah.
I kind of getting that Arthur Clarke, the big black monolith popping up. And I do that because my dad despises 2001 as a movie, because he had all this hype. He waits a year to go see it. And here comes the monkey with the. Mm-hmm. The thing, and then they're in space, and he walked out of the theater. So,
it's, I love the film, but it's a little out there.
I love the film, but you know, I don't know what Kubrick was smoking when he did it, but it's a good film.
I wish he'd share.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Well, you don't want to know what sci-fi writers do when we're writing our books. Trust me.
Writers do when
whatever it takes.
They're not writing.
Yeah, it's definitely not orange vitamin water. I'll leave it at that.
What's really in the bottle?
I have now you consider This is you're writing science fiction.
Yes, with this series, yes.
Yes, yes. And you have other books coming out and previously done that were on the verge of or right on the cusp of. And I like your response to one of the questions that you asked in on one of the things that I read about you today is that they ask about when will the next Nell book be out, and you said, well, if you're one of my explorers. I like that. I like that you call your readers and your people that follow you explorers. That's very clever and it really stands out.
Thank you.
I think you're the only writer we've ever had on the show in 6 years that's ever called a follower explorer. Is that right?
Yeah, I can't think of we've had like gentle readers or something, but that's actually really cool.
Do you find writing science fiction cathartic for you as a person, or do you just like the genre?
Yes, definitely both. I mean,
with both.
I love the genre. I grew up. My dad was a super big sci-fi fan, sci-fi fantasy really fan, and I gravitated towards a lot of speculative fiction. I grew up as an only child. I lived in the middle of the woods. I didn't have a whole lot of friends, so imagination was really my escape. And I think because of that, I had a very vivid imagination because that's where my friends were in my head. So I sort of gravitated naturally towards speculative fiction. And then as I got older and as I started to, come to terms with my identity as a queer person, I realized that a lot of the fiction I was reading, I didn't see myself in those books. Maybe very superficially, but I didn't see people like me who thought like me or who loved like me. And that was really confusing and upsetting. And a lot of the books that really did have characters like me, even if it was some pretty maybe horrific representation at the time, were the sci-fi fantasy books. And so then as I developed into more of a creator and a writer on that side of things, I wanted to where I did see myself, where people like me could find themselves and sort of pay it forward. And a lot of speculative fiction, those worlds you can build, worlds that you hope ours will become, or maybe that we're scared ours will become in some cases, especially towards the middle of the Nell Bentley books. And that was just really cathartic, but also just I had to do that. I needed to believe that our world could be better.
Richard and I just finished publishing an anthology, a planetary anthology called, Planetary Anthology. 11 books, including The Sun and the Moon. Yeah, Sol and Luna. And I noticed one thing in reading over these stories that these science fiction writers had submitted is that you can tell their love of the genre. You can just feel it in their writing. You can tell that they love creating places that don't exist or possibly could in the future. But you can tell they love telling the story of people that do not exist now, but are totally living in their brains.
Yes.
And I like that about science fiction writers. A lot of writers, well, mystery writers and everything else, I mean, they're living in the now. They're writing about the now or noir. Western writers are writing always about, way back in the 1800s. Science fiction, you kind of can go anywhere you want to go. And I think I like that about the genre. And Richard's like, he's a freak. He just loves science fiction. And Bobby and I have gotten used to reading science fiction books. So, I mean, you normally, if things were normal and times were normal, we would have read, I would have read the book in like 3 days. Unfortunately, there things happen. But we always, you know, we get one of the promises we make our authors that we do read your books for the show, which is why I'm glad Richard got through it and Bobby got through the other ones. It happens sometimes, and we've all, you know, missed a book. So
I'm behind on my reading list too. It's fine.
Well, okay, then I don't feel so bad. But you don't have a radio show. I guess the bottom line is that science fiction writers per se have a free ride to go anywhere and do anything they want to do. Mm-hmm. They can make anything work in their stories and in their books, whereas we have normal humans can't. I mean, we don't have air cars. We don't have, you know, suspension devices. We don't have futuristic things where we can go back into history and into time and fix things. Mm-hmm. H.G. Wells was brilliant at that sort of thing. Actually, Richard's pretty good at that sort of thing as well.
I do what I can.
Yes. Go ahead, Bobby.
Well, I was just going to say that this book, of course, we don't have we don't have a world that we don't know how to touch and feel, at least in the three of the books that I touched on. It feels all like it's within our imagination. We're able to put ourselves there. And also the people, you write all the characters so wonderfully. We see now in a lot of different relationships. We see her in love. We see her with past loves. We see her with the students. We see her with Mikey and then her grief there and with her mom. In book two, even though they're, you know, at a distance, we really learn about this wonderful relationship she has with her mom. So she becomes a fully fleshed out character. And I really, you know, again, I just liked her more and more and more. And I actually thank you for writing a character like her, because it opens our eyes to those of us that may not be familiar with Nell's lifestyle choices. It opens our eyes and it becomes like, this so familiar. It's mm-hmm. different, but it's so familiar. And I think that's wonderful writing for a reader.
Thank you.
And with that, we're going to take another break. Don't go away. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is, of course, The Writer's Block, and we'll be back right after this brief word from Creative Edge Publicity.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And you know, there's a reason that authors flock to Creative Edge. Yes, it's true, and no one would believe it, but it is true. Creative Edge, the grassroots publicity firm that has stayed community-minded, is growing. And not only growing, but busting right out of their seams. With a client base of over 70 authors, 2 New York Times bestsellers, 6 USA Today bestsellers, and multiple international bestsellers and award winners, Creative Edge in 4 years has become one of the mainstays in the publicity book market, offering reader-focused opportunities in all levels of media, including podcasts, radio, TV, print, and much more. When it comes to publicity, Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge are experts in the book industry. Look him up at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future.
And we are back. We are back with, of course, our guest tonight, V.S. Holmes, Bobby Jean Bell, Richard Polinelli, and myself. And, of course, I'm going to try this one more time. If you want to call and talk to V, you are more than welcome to. The number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. Again, write it down, 323-203-0815. And don't write down the number I first gave you because it is incorrect. Okay, Richard, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I wanted to go back and touch on something that Jim brought up, where science fiction writers, we can kind of just go with what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And an extent, that's true. But we still have to kind of keep some anchor in reality. And it leads me to the question of, are you more of a hard science fiction sci-fi writer, or do you rely a lot on hand-wavium? And hand-wavium, for those who don't know, that's where you're having something going on in your story that makes absolutely no sense, and the reader wants to know, and you just say as an author, look, it's hand-wavium because I said so. So just go with it, and you'll be fine.
So, we've written some of those.
Yeah, we have, and I've written some of those. I had a scientist email me. He goes, you can't do that. I said, it's a sci-fi book. It's fiction. It's hand-wavium. Move on. So do you find yourself leaning more to wanting to make sure it's believable science in your science fiction, or do you kind of, you know, lean into the hand-wavium sometimes?
I started out leaning really hard into the hard sci-fi, partially because, the first few books really are grounded on Earth in a way that sort of later in the series, not so much the case. And I wanted to get that science accurate, sort of the foundations of the series accurate. And then a little later in the series, we get a little closer to hand-wavium. And on my podcast, I mentioned what's really great about Nell is she doesn't get high-tech stuff. She just doesn't, and she's not interested in it. And so I sort of have an out because someone will start being like, oh, well, you see the 11, da, 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 da. And she's like, just science stuff, stop, just stop. You know, my brain, you start with the science, my brain short circuits right back, to butts. Like, I'm just not interested. My out is because it's such close third person perspective. Mm-hmm. I can sort of do that. I do try, if it's really, a plot, I try to at least, if not grounding it in science that we have now, I try to ground it in our current understanding of the way, physics works and things like that. And maybe some more speculative things. I love reading like Popular Mechanics and some of the weird AI stuff. And I try to incorporate that, but it is some things are definitely a lot softer than hard sci-fi.
Well, I noticed that in Heretics, especially when you had the trip back to Earth, and it was going to take 2 years, and they've got all these people on board. So what they do is they put them in hibernation. Mm-hmm. And you kind of explain that process, and you have the reaction that Nell has to it. And that is science that we can kind of relate to in our time frame now, because we're kind of getting close to being able to do that.
Yes.
I would want, instead of just wandering around the ship for 2 years, sleep the 2 years, and then when you get there, you wake up. And I noticed that, and then as you brought up, as Nell starts running into this tech that they're trying to put on her, she's like, I can't, no, just whatever, don't give me the details. Let's just go. So that's kind of what I was wondering, if you started out hard sci-fi and then kind of leaned on hand waving when you need to. And I think that worked in Heretics.
And it also, part of it too is, I try to explain it maybe once or twice in the beginning. And then, when you've encountered her doing the whole cryo thing, it's her second time in cryo, I believe. And she at that point, though you're joining the series sort of, later on, it's sort of glossing over it a little bit, partially because she doesn't really remember, but also because she doesn't want to remember. And I've already touched on it a little bit. But I also like to use that to incorporate sort of newer aspects, or maybe some research that I did in between books 3 and 4.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you did mention, in the book, you explained this is not her first time going through this. Mm-hmm. She didn't particularly care for it. And you get that impression when she says, look, I'll just, I'll wash dishes for 2 years. I don't care. Just, let me stay awake. And they're like, no, you're going under. And, and then she has the anxiety reaction because she really doesn't want to do it. So, no, you did a very good job for those of us who are coming in late. And that was what I mentioned earlier. You have these little nuggets that help for the late arrivals. And now, I'm going to have to go back and read the first 3 books, but that's just the way it is. But that's what you want if you've got somebody coming in late, is that they want to go back and see what they missed.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you.
Did you have any great tips for writers maybe who are a little stagnant? How do you keep your imagination fertile, and how would you recommend they grow their imaginations?
Take breaks. I know that's like seems sort of counterintuitive. I'm actually like right now I'm experiencing a huge burnout phase. I was going really hard on book five of Nell Bentley, which is Fugitives, and I just had to stop. I couldn't, and it happened a little bit with Heretics. I had to kind of completely revamp my my process, and I think something that's very easy, you know, maybe for all writers, but especially in a couple things, and are sort of, you know, skilled enough to have a process and to sort of know what it is. I think it's very easy to get burnt out and just lost in, you know, what you feel like you're supposed to be doing or what you feel like works best for you. And I think it's really important to take creative breaks, to read and to play games and to watch films and just, you know, absorb other stuff, you know, not just in your genre even. You know, I've learned probably just as much from reading and, you know, just consuming other things, other genres. And I have just sci-fi and fantasy, but giving yourself the grace to take breaks and to just let your brain sit and let those thoughts percolate. Some of my my biggest like epiphanies of writing when I have writer's block have come when I'm driving, washing the dishes for not maybe for 2 years like Nell wants to do, but you know, when I'm not writing, when I'm not sitting at the computer
and you're not thinking about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Or I'm, you know, I'm just sort of untangling, uncombing those plot knots. I definitely think that's probably the most valuable thing.
Okay. The question that we all ask all of our writers, and you just answered it. Well, to a degree, you just answered it. Is that of course, the name of the show is The Writer's Block. And if you've obviously had writer's block from time to time. How did you get yourself out of it other than switching, you know, or going out and taking a walk? Or do you find yourself sometimes struggling to come out of it?
Oh, for sure. For sure. So this might be blasphemy on this show. I don't really consider it writer's block. I think oftentimes I say that because it's, you know, it's an easy, everyone knows what it means. You know, it's like I'm stuck. I'm stuck doing this thing that I love. But in my experience, it is never actually just writer's block for me. Of course, everyone is different, especially with, you know, creative brains are like totally wild. But for me, it's usually there's something else going on, whether it's I actually like part of the story doesn't fit. And so I have writer's block because these pieces won't fit and I can just keep trying to. That's definitely been the case sometimes. Or I think more often for me, it's I'm depressed. I there's, you know, some mental health thing going on. You know, I had incredible writer's block after 2016. I was in a really bad place after a divorce, and you know, a lot of the political stuff was, you know, affecting me personally. So there's that. So I think for me, it's sort of treating mutual problems. You know, writer's block, I think, at least for me, is a symptom of underlying stuff. And so it's usually that, or I'll take a break, I'll take a walk. But now I sort of have, when it's writers related, you know, when it's like this plot won't work, I have my thing where it's like, okay, I either need to shove everything together. It's a bunch of scenes that maybe just need to be one scene and just shove it together. Or oftentimes it's just completely turn it upside down. Mm-hmm. Maybe the character is supposed to be saying the things that the other character is saying. Mm-hmm. And so kind of swishing things up and doing that kind of thing really helps me. But I don't write chronologically. So I also think that helps with that, is I can just sort of move things around.
I think we all do that to a degree. Real short question, and then we're going to go to another real fast break. Mm-hmm. Are you a pantser or plotter?
Now I'm pantser. As of 2020, I'm a pantser.
Good for you. We like pantsers.
Come to the dark side.
There you go. Okay, another real quick one. Traditional or indie?
Indie. Well, hopefully hybrid soon, but indie.
There you go. Come join us.
Come to the dark side. We have cookies.
Come to the dark side. We do science fiction. Okay. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. And we're going to have a real quick listen to Tuscany Bay Books.
Congratulations. You finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com, your answer to getting your book published. And right now, we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books.
And we are back. And, of course, the invitation still stands. Come join the dark side. We are back in the studio with Bobby Jean and Richard and our guest tonight, V.S. Holmes. And in the little time we have left, V, we're kind of running out of time. This has been a fascinating hour, 50 minutes. Why don't you kind of just give us a rundown of what you got planned and what may be sitting on your nightstand?
Good question. I don't know what I have planned. No. So I'm working on Fugitives, which is book 5 of the Star's Edge No Bentley series. There will be a total of 6 books. So part of working on book 5 is realizing all these pieces that belong actually in book 6. That's sort of where I'm at right now. So I'm doing that. And I also have a couple epic fantasy and gothic fantasy novels that I'm working on. One of them is completely out of left field. It was sort of my palate cleanser after writing Heretics. I just wanted to do something totally different. And that's been really, really fun. I was changing legs. Hoping to return to the world of my epic fantasy series, Reforged and Restored, with something a little different. And I don't really know what that will end up being, but I hope that there will be some cameos from some favorites, or maybe some characters that people love to hate. More to the point, I like writing those. So that's sort of what I'm focusing on book-wise. I'm currently reading Into the Drowning Deep by Myra Grant, which is really awesome, sort of cryptozoology meets horror. There's sort of a queer bent in that. It's really, really fun because I'm utterly terrified of dark water, and it totally feeds into all of my fears with that. So I'm enjoying that, and I sort of had reader's block. Talk about a little weird. I had a bit of reader's block in 2020, and so I'm gravitating more towards my favorites, which are some really dark. Sort of horror/horror romances that I'm really enjoying. Most recently, I read S.T. Gibson's A Dowry of Blood, which is a sort of queer empowering retelling of Dracula's Brides. So, also really enjoyed that.
Excellent. Excellent.
Writing those down.
Yes.
Richard loves that. I can tell he's already excited.
Okay. Without further comment.
You like those different worlds, and you kind of live in one. So,
yeah,
well, you actually
true.
Lived in about 4 different worlds the last 2 years.
Yeah, no kidding.
Richard,
yeah, you never know where I'm going to turn up.
You really never do.
Exactly. But you had mentioned you're writing in a different area than what you normally do. It's kind of a palate cleanser. I love authors who don't limit themselves to one area as far right. as what genre you do. And Jim knows there's very few genres I haven't dabbled in over the years. So, I love that because as a writer, it does stretch your legs. Mm-hmm. And you kind of learn some things from writing outside your comfort zone that you can apply to what your normal, quote-unquote normal
right.
route's going
right.
to be.
Oh, for
right.
sure.
I think one of the best lessons I ever learned in writing was with Richard, and we wrote a book together. And, the hardest part about writing a book with another writer is that you each have a different style.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to make the book seamless, you've got to adapt to each other's style as you go. Or you can tell immediately who wrote what.
Yes.
And it kind of detracts from the book itself. And we have gotten great compliments on the fact that our book was seamless.
Yeah. And nobody's been able to figure out what chapter I wrote, what chapter he wrote.
Yep.
We're just like, yes.
Yes. And that's what you're going for. But I highly recommend at least writing one book with another writer. Just to kind of, you learn what they do, and it's a very great learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, not that you don't, maybe not already know that, but, you know.
Yeah, I learned don't use the phrase, sharing. I learned don't use the phrase skin that smoke wagon.
Or call a horse a hoss.
No. Yep, that's the other one, yeah.
No. Yeah. Anyway, you want to give us your email address and your website and where we can find you on Facebook?
For sure.
Twitter.
So I'm on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm VS_Holmes. And on Facebook, I think it's VS Holmes Official is the URL. My website is vsholmes.com. And if you feel like emailing me, it's contact@vsholmes.com. And if you are curious about my work and want to see if it's for you, you can check out, which is a prequel sort of overlapping with some of the events of Travelers, but from Lynn, the love interest perspective. And you can download that free on my website.
Oh.
And I might also add, if you want to book V on any of your shows, if you were a podcaster or a radio or TV host, you can contact her through her publicist, which is Mickey Mickelson at Creative Edge Services, and he'll be happy to hook you up.
Yes, Mickey's the best.
So much. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was wonderful having you. It's great being on the whole show with you.
Thank you so much for having me again. This was really fun.
My pleasure. And you know, there's Mickey's going to have two writers on with us starting in January, so there's a real good possibility you'll be showing up again.
Oh yeah, maybe for nail number 6, we'll see.
Maybe. You know the thing about bad pennies, right? They just keep coming back.
I've got hair the same color.
Anyway, if you want to hang around till the show's over with, we always stick around and just BS for a little bit after the show. So just hang on if you want to. And next week we have a writer, Evan Balkin. His book is Root That Mountain, and I'm not really sure what it's about. I just cracked it today, and hopefully I'll get through it. But it's I don't know what it's about, so I guess we'll find out. It's about Europe, I think. Maybe. I don't know.
That's fine.
At any rate, we thank you so much for joining us. It's always a hoot when we have our listeners listen in. And we, again, want to thank V.S. Holmes for joining us and sitting in her hotel room there. I think you're in Massachusetts, aren't you, right now?
I am, yep.
Yeah.
Are they still crying tears at the Bruins loss last night?
I mean, I don't know anything about sports, but probably.
Well, as an Islanders fan, I'm saying, aw.
For Bobby Jean Bell and, of course, Richard Polinelli, Mr. Jim Bell, who is always behind Bobby G, Bibby Jean, and, of course, Ronan Rosner, our engineer, and, of course, the man who makes it all happen, Mr. Sam Haston, who owns LA Talk Radio, we are out of here.